Good afternoon. This is Mary Jo McCurley here at University Park United Methodist Church in Dallas, Texas, and we are bringing you the Wisdom of the Sages. Today we are so happy to have Trey West. Welcome, Trey.
Thank you for having me.
Trey, we'd love to know a little bit about you, so if I pry too much, just let me know. Tell us, where did you grow up?
I grew up just outside of Birmingham, Alabama. I was actually born in a very small town, Snellville, Georgia.
Really?
Just outside of Atlanta, but when I was 6 months old, my parents moved to Birmingham, and that's where I was all my life, even through college, until I made this journey out here to Texas.
A real Southern boy.
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
And did you grow up in church?
I did. Both of my parents grew up in the Baptist Church, Southern Baptist Church, but I started going to a private school in elementary, and the private school was connected to an Assemblies of God church, and so my mom wanted us to have the experience of church and school together, and so we started attending that church. I actually left the private school, ended up going back into public school, but we stayed in the Assembly of God church up until college. Yeah, I was in the Assembly of God church.
Wow, that's a very interesting church.
It is, yeah. You know, it's pretty Wesleyan in nature. A lot of grace-based theology, very Arminianist, if you want to get that deep into theology.
Uh-huh.
So it's not a far cry from Methodism in a lot of its base grace-based theology. It's very far from United Methodism in terms of the interactions within the worship service and just the worship style as well. Yeah, that's quite a bit different.
Yes, we have a good friend who's a minister in that church,
mm-hmm.
and we love going to hear him. We're fascinated by the worship service.
A lot of fiery preaching,
yeah.
A very, very energetic worship service. One of my childhood friends is a pastor at an AG church in Kansas still. He and I talk at least 2-3 times a year just catching up, and he's still very much in that energetic, charismatic tradition.
Well, I learned from Bishop Stanton just recently that John Wesley went and saw his bishop at one point, and the bishop said, "We want less enthusiasm in the service."
Don't say that in an AG church.
So, what did your parents do for a living?
I don't know if there's a set industry I could ever, you know, associate with my parents. My dad was in business just for a long time. His college major was business, and he worked in business in several industries, or he worked as a business person just in multiple industries. I think the longest I can remember him, one industry being in, is telecommunications. He worked for a company called Southern Link, which was associated with Nextel, for those people who can remember the Nextel two-way radio cell phones. And he did that for a very long time. And now he is a retired bus driver in Mobile, Alabama, just enjoying his dogs, his grandkids, and I don't know if I should say he enjoys driving the bus, but it gives him something to do every day.
Right, get him out of the house.
Yeah, and my mom was in business as well for a long time. She did some stuff in HR, and now she is also retired and living in Mobile, Alabama.
That's great. Any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have an older brother and an older sister. I'm the baby of the family. My sister actually also lives in Mobile, which is why my parents relocated there, and my brother still lives just outside of Birmingham.
And where did you go to college?
I went to the University of Montevallo, which is as small as it sounds. It's a very small liberal arts school just outside of Birmingham. I feel like I've said just outside of Birmingham multiple times now, but that pretty much describes most of my life growing up. But yeah, Montevallo is a small liberal arts school just outside of Birmingham. Big emphasis on music and theater and the arts. It's strange. I'm such a huge college football fan that no one in my family thought I would ever go there because they don't have a football team. In fact, one of our favorite things to say at Montevallo is we're undefeated in football since 1896. University of Montevallo, great arts school.
How many students?
About 3,200. I think they cap it at 4,000, but they never try to get too close to it. 3,200 is what it was when I was there, at least.
And what did you major in?
Vocal performance. So my bachelor's music and vocal performance. I graduated in 2010 with that, and I loved it. I loved my time there. It's why I picked Montevallo, was their great music program. But I didn't want to be a vocal performer, and I figured that out too late, so I finished my degree in vocal performance.
And did you go on to graduate school?
Yeah, so that's what brought me to Texas originally. I was looking at grad schools after, and I wanted to get a master's in music and choral conducting, because that's what I wanted to do, not be a vocal performer. And so I knew Dr. Randy Hooper, who is the choir director at Texas A&M University in Commerce, Texas. I had worked with him as an undergrad and really enjoyed him. And so he invited me to come study for a master's of music with him.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, you're now a far cry from master's in music. What did you do after graduate school?
So while I was in graduate school, I started working at Christ United Methodist Church in Plano as their associate music director, doing their youth, young adult choirs. And I met a man there named Pat Messick, who is the longtime music director, and he became a huge influence on my life, very much mentor, even musical father figure type. And he's the one who sort of steered me in the direction of music ministry as a vocation. Everything I had done up until then was just out of growing up in the church and a desire to give back and be involved, to combine my passion of music and ministry non-vocationally. But he is the one who made me realize, no, you can do this. You can actually be a music minister and make a living. Not necessarily a great one, but you can pay your bills. You can make a living. And so I decided, my original plan was to get a doctorate and teach college, but after working with Pat, I decided I wanted to be in music ministry. That's where I felt led. And so that's what I did for about 12 years. I was from the time I was in grad school until the time I just recently left last year, the last church where I was the music minister. That's what I did. I was for those of you who are UP members, I was the Mark Pope of three different churches during that time.
Wow. Were they Methodist churches?
Yeah, all United Methodists. So
how did you get to that?
So I, in college, after growing up in the Assembly of God Church, I wanted to branch out. I wanted to explore different denominations. And so I spent a year in a Presbyterian church. I spent a year in an Anglican church. I spent a year in a United Methodist church. I should say I spent 2 years in an Anglican church, and then I spent a year in a United Methodist church. And even in those three denominations, I was either a scholarship singer or a part-time choir director, something along those lines. I just felt at home in the United Methodist Church. It just felt like an easy transition theologically from the Assembly of God Church to the United Methodist Church. But it also gave me a place to continue to love contemporary worship, which is what I grew up with, but also a place to explore and appreciate my newfound love for traditional worship, which I had not grown up with. That was new to me. I always sang in high school choir, so I was always singing those types of songs, but not in church. And in First United Methodist Church of Montevallo, Alabama, I found this place where I could easily love contemporary worship and traditional worship together.
How do your parents feel about you becoming a Methodist?
I don't think they mind. I know they don't mind. Like I said earlier, they grew up Baptist and switched to, well, my mom switched to Assembly of God. My dad was still pretty Baptist most of the time, but now he attends an Assembly of God church, and, you know, they changed denominations, and we have family members that are United Methodist. We have family members that are still Southern Baptist, and I think they're just proud that I'm working in ministry, period, that I've chosen this path to go down.
And where did you meet your wife?
At Christ United Methodist. So her family are longtime members of Christ United Methodist in Plano. In fact, her dad is a very talented musician himself and was my accompanist for my choirs. So people ask me, do you get along with your father-in-law? I say, well, I've known him longer than my wife, so yeah, we get along pretty well. But yeah, so that, and that's part of why it was an easy thing to stay in the United Methodist Church. Not only did I feel at home, but I also married a deeply United Methodist family. My wife's mom serves on the Board of Ordained Ministry within the North Texas Conference for one of the districts, and then her grandfather, my mother-in-law's father, is a retired DS and United Methodist clergy. So a deeply, deeply United Methodist family that I've married into.
Well, bless you.
Yes, yes, definitely.
So, where do you attend Christ United Methodist Church?
No, so we've been going to Grace Avenue United Methodist. We live in the colony, and it's we actually lived in Frisco before we lived in the colony, and we had been visiting with Grace Avenue there before, and it's still very close to our house in the colony, so we've continued visiting there. I haven't joined a church yet since we've moved back here. The church I was at before I came to UP decided to disaffiliate, and they joined the Global Methodist Church, which prompted me, my decision to leave and not only not worship there anymore, but not work there anymore. That's what led me to UP. But since we've removed our membership from that church, we haven't joined a new church, but we've been regularly visiting at Grace Avenue.
Excellent. So, tell us what your job description is here at University Park.
Yeah.
And how did you get to that from music?
So, first, how did I get to that? I about 4 years ago, I started feeling, I guess for lack of a better word, jaded, a little bit unsettled. Being in music ministry, I felt like I was still very passionate about music, and I felt like I was still very passionate about ministry. And when you take two passions and you combine them, sometimes you can be a little bit of a zealot, and it's not necessarily the best thing when you're so passionate about something that you see it going a certain way, and when it doesn't go that way, it tends to make you a little bit, I don't know what the word, over exuberant, I guess. I don't know. You care maybe even a little too much than you should. And so I decided I wanted to spend a season of my life where I have musical outlets and I have ministry outlets, and they don't necessarily coincide. To put it plainly, combining my passions was actually ruining my love for each of them. I was letting my musical passions interfere with my ministry passions, and my ministry passions interfere with music, and it was causing me to sort of resent both of them. And so I decided I wanted to separate them, spend a season in each of them without them combined. And since then, it's been great. I've very much enjoyed that. One thing I had to decide in doing that was, well, if I'm going to do that, what am I going to vocationally do? Because one or the other is an option. But where do I feel like I'm being led? Where do I feel like I can still have a safe level of passion to where it doesn't overtake my life? And along the way, and Mark would tell you this as well, along the way of being in music ministry is a whole lot of communications ministry. Music and communications ministry really go hand in hand in most churches. They work very closely together. Several communications positions alongside musical positions throughout my career. And so as I was trying to decide where am I going to go next vocationally, what turn am I going to take, communications was a very logical next step, a very logical transition. Having worked on websites, having worked for social media, having worked on actual visioning and strategy of communications ministry, it was an easy thing for me to segue into that. And so that's what I've been doing now for a little over a year, and have very much enjoyed it. I love being able to have a hand in multiple ministries as opposed to sort of being sectioned off into one pigeonholed area. In communications ministry, everything the church does has to be communicated. Every event, every strategy, every philosophy has to be communicated. So I get to have a little bit of a stake in everything we do and get to see a little bit more of the work that goes into it from each and every staff member, which I guess also segues into what is my job description. If you'd like to tell me, I would love to hear what my job description is exactly. But it is that. It is to take the vision of each of our program staff member, our worship staff, and our pastoral staff, and help them execute it to the best of its ability so that it's seen and it's heard, and in some ways even felt. So that's kind of what I think my job description is.
Well, we love having you here, and it's your passion is exciting.
Oh, good.
So do you plan to have a family?
Yes, actually, yeah. My wife and I have been married just over 4 years now, and we're beginning that conversation. We definitely want kids. For the past 4 years, though, we've been very content with our dog. he's a perfect little 22-pound Chihuahua Terrier mix named Eddie, and that's our family of three. But yes, we've begun the conversation as to what might be our next step. So
how did you come to University Park?
Yeah, so that was kind of a crazy situation. I was working at that church previously that disaffiliated, and I loved it there. I loved the staff. I loved the people. And they definitely made the right decision for their congregation. But it wasn't the right decision for me and my deeply, deeply United Methodist wife. once I made the decision, once my wife and I talked about it and we made the decision to look elsewhere, the very next day I found out about this job opening at UP. And it felt very kismet, fate level type stuff. I put together my portfolio and my package and I sent it to Emma and our SPR, and I think it was maybe a month later they had offered and I accepted the job. It happened very, very quickly, which I was also very thankful for, because I had told that church that I was going to be leaving, so it worked out really well, and it's been fantastic ever since.
Well, you mentioned a little bit one of the people that has influenced you. Is there anyone else that stands out for you?
Yeah, Pat Messick was definitely the biggest influence from a ministry standpoint on my life. A couple other people have been, Gary Packwood was a choir director I had in college. He is the one who first turned me on to choral directing, period. He is this exuberant person who has a remarkable story that we don't have enough time for, but suffice it to say, he was at LSU working on his doctorate. He got in a car wreck. He lost his right arm. He was right-handed, and he was a conductor. To lose your not only your dominant arm as a person, but also your dominant arm as a conductor, is devastating. And he has this incredible story that ends with him having this incredibly successful career, which he does. And he be out of that, he just shines positivity in everyone's life. And he just had a major impact on me early, as someone who uplifts rather than tears down, and I aspire to be something like that. Another person is Melanie Grice, who is the director of operations at Keller United Methodist. But when I was there, she and I did communications together. And she's had a huge impact to me on the importance of communications ministry. How I think some people think communications ministry is updating the website and printing things. And it can be. It definitely can be that. But like I talked about earlier, it's not just that. It's our responsibility to help create and cast vision as well. And so she's had a pretty impactful impact on me as a communications minister.
What would you say your philosophy has been that has propelled you through life?
Oh man, that's a heavy question. If you're into Enneagram, I am. And I'm an Enneagram 8. And I'm really into Enneagram now, for better or for worse. According to conversations with my friends, they might say for worse because I talk about it way too much. But as an eight, I think the self-awareness that reading about Enneagram brings, it helps me realize as an eight that I'm really, really into justice. I want what is good and right and fair to be what happens. And I think that's my philosophy as well. I think that's what drives me philosophically, is I want to see a just world where people are taken care of, where people are allowed to thrive in their environments, and they're not held back for any sort of socioeconomic or demographical reason. And I think that just drives me to try and see the world be better. You know, it's be the good you want to see in the world. That's sort of kind of how I try to be. I don't know. I don't feel like I'm wording this very eloquently.
But you're doing great.
But yeah, I guess, you know, be the good you want to see in the world, and as an eight, trying to actually impact that.
And what are the characteristics of an eight?
What are the characteristics of an eight? Well, the first thing people would probably tell you is they have a short temper. And at a good self-aware eight, which I try to be, knows they have a temper and can control it. But, you know, that's the first thing, is a bit of a short fuse. But also, they are decision makers. The conversations can happen, but at the end of the most conversations, a decision has to be made. And if you need a decision to be made and everyone's on the fence, if you've got an eight in the room, just turn to them, because they'll make the decision, I promise you. If you ever need anyone ever needs a decision made, just call me. I can make the decision for you. But yeah, that's probably it. They're going to be your deciders. A lot of them have great leadership skills. I feel like I'm talking myself up at this point. A lot of eights are known for being leaders, and because of they have that decisive mentality. And a healthy eight is one who is going to inspire people, and an unhealthy eight is one who's going to dictate people. Mm-hmm. So
it's a lot of CEOs and things like that. I think spiritual animal is a lion. Is that right?
Oh, that seems about right.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm also a Gryffindor, if you're into Harry Potter.
What do you see as the future of University Park?
You know, at University Park, I see a church that has, it almost sounds cliche, that has just unlimited potential. We exist at this budding urban center that is already large. Dallas is such a large city with so much potential in and of itself, and it's only getting bigger. All projections show, I've read one recently that says that they think, I think it was something like 30 to 50 years, they think that Dallas is going to outgrow New York City.
Wow.
And if you look at the Metroplex at large and the unlimited growth potential that North Texas provides, it's believable. It's absolutely believable. And I think that University Park is just situated perfectly right in the middle of it all. We have this United Methodist congregation who loves, who is grace-filled, and has potential to capture an audience and say, you have a place to belong here. In a world where people are looking for a place to belong, I really genuinely think people ask why my generation, I'm a millennial, people ask why my generation is leaving the church. And I think it's because there's been decades and decades, even centuries, of a disingenuous nature by some people in the church, or a perceived hypocritical nature by some people in the church. And if we're harnessing those people and saying, but we're not that, we are a place where you can love and be loved, we're a place where you can know and be known, we are a place that you can serve and be served, I think my generation is craving that sort of authenticity. So we have unlimited potential as to what we can do. The only thing that might hold us back a little bit is just our actual physical location. There's not a lot of opportunity to grow actually neighborhoods in the Park Cities. It's developed. There's not a lot of new constructions happening here, but that doesn't mean there's not still a captive audience of people there. And I can tell you this, my generation is one that will drive out of their way for something they feel loyal to. You know, I drive here because I enjoy this job. I pass churches who probably need communications director to come here because I believe in what we're doing here and I believe there's potential. And I think you can harness that with people who don't live in the Park Cities by showing them they have a place to love and be loved. And they'll, if they're loyal to that and they grab hold of that, they would be willing to drive out of the way to come here.
Well, Trey, we are really blessed that you are here to help us with that growth, along with Dallas. And thank you so much for talking with us today and sharing a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And we appreciate you listening to our podcast and hope you will be with us next week. May God be with each of you until we meet again.